Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, annuities and perpetuities. And this subject will go, of course, into Friday, too. Now, one thing about this topic, and you'll see this in other parts of the course, too, is that this is where there's just a calculator routine that you have to know how to do, and then you'll have the answer for you. Now, there are formulas for these that you can use as well, but those formulas, you'll see that they can get pretty cumbersome, and it's easier to make a mistake trying to do the formula than it is to just push in the numbers straight into a calculator like this one right here. So follow the steps in the calculator routine, and you'll get some of the harder problems on my midterm done pretty well. I do three levels of problems on a midterm. You can get a C or a low B with level one, the easies. And then to get a B to a low A, then there's level two questions. And then the level three are the math questions. That's how you could get a really high A. So if you can get these calculator routines down, you've got the worst of the exam under control. But anyway, before I go into that kind of stuff today, we have a quick look at the numbers. And if we look at these numbers, we'll see, holy cats. So, in your judgment, would you say that this is a good day or a bad day? A bull day or a bear day?
Bull.
Yeah, you're getting a little better at this. Bull. Yeah, as you can see, it's got that typical pattern. The Dow, these big, huge, lumbering monsters of the earth, up 0.75%. The S&P, large companies, but more diverse, more competitive, they're up 1.25%. And then the NASDAQ just rip snorting up almost 1.7%. The small companies have the biggest sensitivity, both up and down. So you can see that pattern is holding a lot these days. In general, it does. Now, if we look over here, crude is fighting to get back up to $90 a barrel. It'll get there. Now, one thing that is going on in the crude market right now is that the gasoline is beginning to go up at the pump. You're beginning to see it. There was a lot of gasoline in the pipelines after the refining, and so now that is beginning to come to terms with the current price of crude, you're going to start seeing gasoline prices go up. I saw around town, I was seeing about $3.69 a gallon some places. It's definitely beginning to show that higher crude oil price right now as the gasoline comes in. How the hell? Excuse me for that. Gold and silver are actually up too. Nothing spectacular, but they're having a day. Money is being thrown at equities. Stock price is going up. Apparently, money is being thrown at the metals. And the 10-year bonds are down. The yields are down 2.9 basis points, which means the prices of bonds are going up. So there's money being thrown at all of these different types of investments, which tends to mean that money is being pulled out of cash, and it's being spent. And so that would be almost more of a somewhat longer term bullish sentiment. You're seeing money being pulled out of the bank and thrown at things. And so that doesn't mean we're not going to have a crash tomorrow, but it kind of gives me a sense that there is a longer-term optimism about the economy and all of that. We may be coming to the end of the pandemic. That's great news. No more masks, so you'll have to see my ugly face. The unemployment figures are showing a lot of strength, and productivity is up. So, I mean, there's an optimism out there. I don't know how much it's warranted, but you have some happy things. And if you go over here, you look, London was in a good mood. Tokyo was in a good mood. So this is almost like a global happy that is sort of around the world. It looks like there is a bullish sentiment. It's not spectacularly bullish, but then again, I don't know if I would want to trust too much of a happy day, because I'd be afraid that there'd be a correction day very quickly. But for right now, at least as far as what we're seeing in these numbers, they are communicating the best way that economies can. They are communicating positivity, bullishness. Excuse me. Like I said, that doesn't mean that tomorrow we won't have a crash, but at the same time, I honestly don't think so. We'll talk more about that as time goes along. Now, with the routines that I'm going to show you, the same routines are available in your book. They show them on the BA2 and the HP10C, but this calculator just shows it a lot better how the process lays out. When I showed you the first round on Monday about present values and future values, I gave you this sort of core formula that we have. The future value FV equals PV times 1 plus R, like that. Okay. That is what we sometimes call a lump sum. Lump, L-U-M-P, lump sum formula. It's for a single plop of money showing up. That's an easy formula. The formula for something where there's more than one component to the cash flow is more complicated, and that's why there are more chances to make an arithmetic mistake in it. A series of payments is called an annuity. Now, technically, a lump sum is an annuity of one payment. I mean, you know, if you want to get right down to it. But in general, though, a normal annuity would be more than one payment. Like, for example, your car loan payments, that is an annuity. We can calculate the payment's values by a formula or by a calculator. Now, there are different types of annuities. Payments at end of period, of periods, those are called ordinary annuities. Payments at end of period, payments at the beginnings of periods, that's called an annuity due. Now, I think you probably are already shown this in your accounting course, and so I'm taking you back through it. First of all, to refresh the terminology for you, and also to show you how we do these in finance. How do you know an ordinary annuity from an annuity due? I guarantee you on a test, I will say, starting now, you put so much in the bank every month. If I say that, that's an annuity due. And you must on the TVM solver, you need to take it down there. If it is an annuity due, don't forget to put that toggle on begin. if it's an ordinary annuity, put it on the end. One thing I had some years back, I would sort of scramble questions in such a way that on a test, an annuity due problem would come and then an ordinary annuity problem. And I couldn't figure out why the students would get the annuity due, but they would blow the ordinary annuity. It was because they were moving so fast, they forgot to change that toggle from begin back to end. So I figured out that if I do the ordinary annuity problem first, then the annuity due, that problem doesn't happen. It's just the oddest thing. So you know, on a test or a quiz, you'll see the annuity, ordinary annuity problems first. Now, there are other things, too. If payments are all the same, we call it a level annuity. A level annuity. Those are very common at this level, at this time. Now, for the midterm, there'll be level annuities. They're very very common in personal finance and in especially because your car payments, your home loan payments, those will be level annuity because the payments are all going to be the same. So they're level annuity. They're easy to calculate. Now, a non-level annuity can be a pain. Find the present value of a non-level annuity. Well, you'd have to take the present value of each one of the pieces on its own and then add them up. You can imagine what a pain in the butt that is if it's like 10 years of different payments. Actually, I'll show you. It won't be right now. When we need it, there's actually a dirty trick you can do with a calculator to make it think that it is a level annuity. And so you don't have to do that terrible calculate each one. Now, here's where you would see non-levels. One place is when you're projecting free cash flows. If I've got 10 years of a company's free cash flows and I want to find the present value, that's going to tell me sort of the intrinsic value of the company, the present value of its future expected cash flows. That's how we would do it. But those are certainly not going to be all the same. They're going to be different. And so I would have to do each one, take the present value of the first years, take the present value of the second years, et cetera, and then add them all up. That's a pain in the backside. And like I said, there is a way to do it very quickly. In Excel, it's a joke. And so after the midterm, when we do a non-level annuity, I'll show you how to do it in the calculator and in Excel both. And either way, it's easier than doing it the hard formula way. Taking all that aside now, ordinary annuities, ordinary. Like I said, classically, you know darn well it's toggle on the end, and we'll do some of these here in a few minutes. Payments on loans. You get a car loan. You get a home loan, something like that. Where would you see annuity due? In other words, payments at the beginning. That is actually the subject of financial planning. A lot of annuity due. Let me give you an example here. You, sir. There's going to be a time in your life when, we hope it's after college, but your significant other is going to say to you four words that will change your life. You know what those four words are? We're having a baby. Mm-hmm. Did it to me. Right there, I just thought about, well, do I get the razor blades out and kill myself? I didn't because I figured my life's over either way and I'd save money on razor blades if I didn't kill myself. But yeah, that's how it is. And so, you know, after you get over the initial shock of actually doing that very big growing up thing there, you go to the delivery. Now, let me tell you about delivery. I won't be gross about it, but I was exhausted when it was over. I was in the delivery room. I was tired. I mean, I don't know how she was, but I was worn out. But, you know, afterwards, I was exhilarated. I left the delivery room, I left the hospital, and I headed for White Castle to get me a 30 White Castle cheeseburger case, extra onions, so I'd have cramps to take my mind off how frightened I was of the future. Poor kid. God, I'm a bad father. But anyway, listen, that first kid's birthday, the day the child is born, you decide, by golly, I'm going to put money into an account. Starting today, I'm going to put in $2,000 on every one of that kid's birthdays. When the kid's 17, the last payment will go in. That'll be 18 payments. You see that? 0 to 17, that'll be 18 payments. And then I'll ride forward a year, and on the kid's 18th birthday, I'm going to give a kid a check for what's in the bank and say, here's your tuition. By that time, it'll probably be, here's your tuition for 2 months. But you're going to do this. Okay? Now, first of all, that's an annuity due. You see that? You're starting today. Kid's 0th birthday. You're going to start this. And then every year for 18 years, you're going to put $2,000 in. Let's do this. And yes, you can bring out your calculator. Please bring out your computers, whatever you want to do this. I'll give you a minute if you want to pull out your computer to do it. Okay, you ready? Oh, I'll go ahead. Crank up here for a second. Okay, here we go. 18 years. Let's say that you can put the money in at 3.09%. There's no present value. That would be there if you had a kicker. You know, I'm going to put in an extra 10 grand to get this started. No, this is just payments. So there's no kicker, nothing at the beginning. But your payments are going to be $2,000 each. Now, one last thing you're going to have to do. We're going to calculate the FE, but for heaven's sakes, this is an annuity due. Please don't forget that, for heaven's sakes. So you toggle to begin, then take it back up to FV, alpha, solve, $48,670. There you go. That's it. That's all there is to it. That's a question. That's a question. Well, obviously different numbers, but that's a question on your next quiz, and it's a question on your midterm. You do this. What is it? 20 seconds to do it, and that's it. That's all there is to this. Don't make this a pain in the butt. Now, I'm going to show you one quick thing here, and I'm not going to ask you about this, but I think maybe the book has a problem in the homework with it. You're making your payments every into it. Now, here's the thing. The compoundings follow the payments. So if the payments are once a year, then the compoundings are once a year. If the payments are every month, then the compoundings are every month. Okay? There are a few times when your compoundings are different from your payments. Like, for example, you might have gotten an account where you're going to put the money in every year, but this account compounds semi-annually. That is a real difficult thing to do with a formula. But here, if you have compoundings that are more than once a year, you go down here to C over Y equals, and you change it to, for semi-annual, 2. Or if it's quarterly, you change it to 4. Now, for heaven's sakes, don't forget to change it back when you're finished with the problem. But this will take care of compoundings that are more frequent than payments. So then, once I got that, I can do it again. Now, this should be a little bit more because that extra compounding every year should juice it a little bit. It's not going to be spectacular, but 48,670 should be a little more alpha solve. Yeah, 48,786. In other words, you made an extra whoop-de-doo $86. Now watch, suppose that you had an account where you're making the payments every year, but it's compounding quarterly. Just put a 4 in there and go back up, alpha, solve. See, it just juices it a little bit. Nothing big. So this problem, the formula is just rather daunting to fix that. But in here, you can fix that really fast. So don't worry too much about that. Let's do an ordinary annuity. I'm going to do a couple. Once you get the hang of these, they're almost like a joke. Just key in the numbers, get your answer. And as I've told you before, if you make a mistake, it's going to look, the answer is just going to be awful. It's going to be way out there. Now, as long as you put in all the numbers except one, you can calculate anything in these. So, you decide, sir, that you want to live the dream. So you're going to buy yourself a nice car. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, a decent car. Not one of these, we're not talking about one of those boxy things like a, what's that one, the Soul by Kia, or I don't know why they don't recall for ugly, but anyway, we're talking about a nice car, maybe a $22,000 car. And you go to your bank and you say, okay, I want a 5-year loan. Watch what I'm doing. I'm on the end. 5-year loan times 12 payments a year. So in other words, down, there will be 60 total payments. You okay with that? Just however many years. Like, for example, if it were a mortgage, a 30-year mortgage, it would be a 30-year times 12. Now, the I percent, let's say that you can get 4.19 APR. So what you do is, in the I percent, you put in 4.19 divided by 12. Because that interest is going to recalculate every time you make one of those monthly payments. So in the I percent slot, it's always the APR divided by the number of payments a year. Now, the PV is where you put the price that you're going to borrow. And don't forget, it's always going to be a negative. So you want to buy a $22,000 car on a loan, so it's negative 22,000. Now, leave the payment alone. We're going to that's what we're going to calculate. Now, we've got to go down here, get rid of, put a zero for the FV because there's no kicker at the end. Your payments will finish off the loan. There's nothing at the end. There's one exception to this. I'm just going to say it. I'm not going to ask you about it. Are any of you familiar with how lease agreements on cars work? You see, at the end of a lease, you can pay a lump of money and you own the car. As a matter of fact, a fellow I know, he gets a new lease every 3 years. And he even commented, he said, yeah, I could actually, my lease is almost up and I was going to flip the car, but they said that I could get the car if I paid him an extra $6,000. So that would be the only place where you would see an FV, is if there were some kicker at the end. Later in the course, you're going to see an important thing where we do bonds, where there's a number there. But for this, just leave it. Now, one last thing, for heaven's sakes, don't forget to put it back on end because your payments begin at the end of the month of that you borrow. Okay? Don't forget that. Now, go back up here to the payments, and you say, alpha solve. $407.05 a month will be your payments. That's it. That's all there is to it, and you've got your payments. This actually can help you in a couple of ways. One is, when you're looking at cars, you're going to have a good idea of what your payment will be. You can calculate it yourself. Find out what the interest rate is at the bank that you want to use, your credit union, and then you can go through this calculation yourself and then brace for the impact. You know, it's funny because $407 to me seems like just a hell of a lot of money. But, you know, that's the way car payments are. Now, I'm going to show you a little twist on this, kind of something we do, a famous routine. You see, when you go to a bank for a loan, they're going to calculate your disposable income, and then they are going to say, okay, a certain percentage of that is all you can afford for a payment. It might be 15% of your disposable you could allow for a car. We will say yes if it's anything less than that. So let me take it up here. Suppose that you, madam, they've calculated what you've got after your core, disposable would be after your core payments for rent and all that kind of stuff. And they calculate that you're going to have $4,200 every month disposable. You could say, okay, then they said that I can afford a payment. They'll give me a loan for a payment that would be no more than 15% of that. So times 0.15. Okay. $630. Now I can take it up to the present value, and I can say alpha solve. So I can afford, they would approve the loan up to they would approve the loan for any car that was less than $3,450. What that does is that gives you something that you can talk to tell the dealer. Look, I have to come in out the door, tax and title and everything, below $34,000 on the car, period. Not going to get the loan if I can't do that. Well, of course, the dealer is going to hem and haw and bitch and all this kind of stuff about it. But you're going to say, no, I've already calculated. Bank told me 15% of my disposable is $4,200 a month. So I cannot afford any loan that would be for more than $34,050. That's it. It gives you a way of a negotiating tool. It gives you a way of walking in there and saying, you have to make this happen. And, of course, like I said, they're going to bitch and hem and haw. Well, we can figure out somewhere, you know, because we can't go any lower. And I'll give you exactly how this happened for me just last month. A 3-year loan, 3 years times 12 months per year, and an APR of 2.99% divided by 12. And I could afford payments of no more than $240 a month. I was looking at a Subaru Outback of 2019. So I took the Alpha Solve. Now this guy was trying to sell me an Outback, high mileage, warranty was already gone through 36 months, and he wanted me to pay $28,000 for it. And then he'd give me a little bit for my current car. So I calculated the best that I could do. And he just had a fit. Okay. So suppose that I put down $5,000 on it. Okay. The best he could do was $19,000. And I could get a 4-year loan. So that'd be 48 months. Alpha solve. I said, your mother. I didn't know his mom. It's not going to happen. It's just the end of the deal. He's not going to come down that far, and I can't go up that far with the payment. So it was a deal that was over with right there. And so that was sort of cold reality for me, but this is the math. You can't beat the math of the deal. So this gives you an idea of what we can and can't do. Now, in financial planning, here's how financial planning oftentimes works. You go to a family, they're well-to-do. We don't do financial planning for normal people. A wealthier family, and they'll say, okay. You say, well, we want to have a down payment on a house in 5 years. We'd like to have a new car every 3 years. And we also want a vacation every other year. And also, we've got a 9-year-old kid and a 6-year-old kid, and we want to have enough money for them for college. So what we do is we lay out these future values that have to be achieved. And then we calculate the payment for each one of those to achieve that at the time that it comes. And then we add up those payments, and we say, write a check today for that. And then you do that every month, and every one of your goals will be achieved. That's how financial planning is done. It's just basically a whole series of payments for to achieve future values. So in other words, let's go back to that kid with 18 years, and you can put the money in the bank at 3.09, and you want that kid to have in the bank $150,000 that you can give to the kid for college. Okay, so to cover 4 years of tuition. And then, okay, what do I have to do? And there's no present value, no kicker. And it's going to be an annuity due. How much do I have to put in the bank every year for 18 years to achieve that? Alpha, Sol. $6,163. Of course, when I see that number, I'm going to say, that kid's got to get a job. But you see, this is the cold numbers. These are the numbers that the math gives us. There's no working around it, no hopes and dreams of getting a bonus or something like that. No, this is what you have to do to get that down there. This is science, and it's actually kind of cool because it isn't in the realm of, well, fuzzy things at all. This is just what has to happen to get that to that goal that you have of having that kid with $150,000 so that the tuition for 4 years of college is taken care of. And it is kind of cold water because, like I said, for normal people like you and me who aren't going to have huge amounts of money to throw every month at something, this isn't going to happen. So that's why financial planning is something for the upper middle class and the wealthy. When we get down to people like us, we're still worrying about paying our rent for the month and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, here it is, right here. Now, if you know what I'm doing here and you can start to replicate this, and I'll do a few more of these problems on Friday, just to get you into the hang of it, and be sure to write this down in your notes, these what goes in what slots, because for the quiz, obviously, and then you're allowed a 4x6 note card both sides for the midterm, this'll get you these hard questions, the level 3 questions, if you can just do this kind of stuff that I'm doing here. So that's your incentive to know how to do this, to get this right. And you can do all kinds of stupid pet tricks on this. You could actually calculate, okay, well, let's talk about this one. Now, when you buy a home, you're going to get a much better deal if you have a down payment, ideally. So let's say in 5 years, you want to buy a home. And you want to put money aside every month to get a down payment. Now you go to a bank and you say, okay, I'm going to create an annuity. What can I lock in an interest rate for this annuity? And they may say, okay, we will lock in for you. Let's say, now this is a little out of line with the interest rates right now, but we can lock in a 3.19% guaranteed return over the life of this annuity, which is 5 years. There's going to be no kicker at the beginning, but what I want to do is, let's say I want a home that's $180,000, and I want a down payment of, let's say, 5%. So I want a $9,000 down payment to juice the deal. Now we're going to put in I put that in the wrong spot. That's the future value is 9,000. So now I can go up here. If we're beginning, we're starting the payments now. Now let's calculate the PMT. How much do I have to put in the bank every month so that in 5 years I have this $9,000 alpha solve? I would have to commit to this annuity due $138 every month. And I would have to stick to it, obviously. But if I did that every month for 5 years, I'd have $9,000 walking in to get a mortgage loan. I'd have it. That's someplace where we can talk about the average person getting ready now, paying it forward, as it were, for something that we wanted in 5 years. We want a $180,000 home. We know damn well that we are going to get a better deal on it if we have a down payment, and if we can put down 5%, well, we can be pretty well assured that we're going to be okay getting our loan, and that means that we're just going to have to commit about $138 every month for 5 long years. And as long as we can do that, we've got ourselves a home. Now, are a couple of programs around around the state where we take people who are coming out of difficult situations, and we want to show them how they can help themselves by giving up something like $138 instead of buying lottery tickets or buying extra booze. We get them to the point where they understand that, look, if you can make a commitment, you can have a home of your own in 5 years. Maybe not $180,000. Maybe it's a $100,000 home, for God's sake, but you can still have this. But it means that we have to teach you how to budget your money and how not to spend money frivolously. If you can do that, we can even do this for people who aren't the fancy rich people. Okay, you following what I'm doing here? These are just calculator keystrokes, nothing complicated about it at all. Just we'll do a few more of these on the next class. Now let me show you one more, and it was just spectacular how many times I kept screwing up trying to put the numbers in the last class. I'm going to try to do it right this time. I'm going to really shock you. Madam, it's your lucky day. Yes, it is. It's your lucky day. You bought a lotto ticket. And it won. You looked at it and you were about to throw it away and then, wait, what? What? Huh? $25 million. You won $25 million. Now, you're obviously thinking of all the things you can do with that. You know, take care of problems that you caused for the world and, you know, buy some candy and do some charitable contributions. It's all great. I got me $25 million. Well, no, you don't. Because lotteries, all of them, say, oh, you get that in 20 equal installments. In other words, they don't pay you $25 million. They pay you an annuity. Now, the annuity adds, the payments add up to $25 million. But you can now see that that isn't really $25 million. 20 years. Let's say that if you had money now, you could put it into a bank account at 4%. The payments are 25,000 divided by 20. So each year the payments are $1,250,000. There's no kicker. You get your first check right away on this one. You'll get your first check right away. Begin. Let's see what the present value of that, what it actually is worth. Alpha, solve. That's not $25 million, that's $17,667,424. It is not $25 million. You see, they take advantage of the fact that most people have no concept of present value. Well, that is $25 million because it's $1,250,000 a year for 20 years. So $1,250,000 times 20 is $25 million. Duh. No, it's not. It's a lot less than $25 million. That's considerably less. So, in other words, a little bit of knowledge of finance can reveal how even a state agency can take advantage of people by making them think that they're getting much more than what they are. And so that's one of the cautionary tales, is that the time value of money means that $1,250,000, each year out, its present value is less and less. By the time you get to that 20th year, if you're sitting here now, $1,250,000 in 20 years is not all that much right now. So this is that time value of money kind of sneaking in and saying, we don't add up payments. We have to do them as present values. And fortunately, with calculators like this, you can do it very quickly and find out what the real story is behind the money that you are putting in. One thing that I want to caution here, on an exam or a quiz, one thing that I do, for one thing, is the actual answer, I give a range around the right answer. So if this one were on a test, I'd say take any answer between 1,700,000 and 1,800,000. So in other words, if you do have a little glitch in your calculation, you'll still get it because I'll have that range there. Another thing is that it's only in dollars. When we're doing these kinds of projections like this and calculations, we don't round to the nearest penny or five decimal places. It's only to the nearest dollar. At least normally that's the way it is in real life, in real practice. So when you give an answer on a quiz or a test, always just put in the number of dollars. And I'll even say rounded to the nearest dollar. And if you round wrong, you'll still probably get it because I'll have a range around it so that if you screw up the rounding, you're going to be fine on it. Okay? So just know this, that if you get these down now, and we'll do, again, some more on Friday, and if you can ace it on the quiz next week, well, you're in good shape for the midterm. You're in fine shape, and you're getting the hardest ones. One thing is, I will give an attendance quiz Friday or Monday. I'll give an attendance quiz. All it'll say is, are you here? I do that like 3 or 4 times during a semester. I'll warn you about this one coming up. And then the quiz will probably be on Wednesday, it'll be on Wednesday or Friday of next week. And it'll cover these calculations. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.